So put that on the recorder. Dun, da, da.
The theme for the day.
That's right. See, you never know what's going to happen. It's like in Big Bang Theory. Anything could happen Thursday, right? Well, what did we used to do on Elm? Well, I don't remember what we used to do. Well, that's why we stopped doing it, all right? Because we couldn't remember what we were doing. See, it's even extending outward here. Yes, please, Greg. Thank you. Let me ring the bell. See if we got anybody else coming in here from the circus. We're not locking you out, and you come on in. Hey, Phil. Good morning, buddy. Good to see you.
I'm not sure which one is yours. Let me see.
Let me just see if this one is the one.
Jerry?
Okay. Sorry.
Jerry, all you need to do is walk out there and say, dun dun dun.
Let's see, is there anything else? We got the Kleenex distributed. We got lost and found books. Okay, we're doing okay. All right. I am so grateful for you guys. Well, not just you personally. Well, yes, you personally, but this, whatever it is we're doing on Sunday morning, which kind of, for me anyway, goes beyond definition, which is perfectly okay. We like to say this, wherever you are on your spiritual path, you're welcome here. And if you're new, Steve, this is a sort of an introduction to what we're doing.
Yeah,
if you,
I'm not quite new, but it's been a long time since I've been here.
You're perfectly okay. So, and if anybody needs them, there should be some of these in the basket as it gets passed around of the website that we have. And if you are not on our email mailing list and would like to be, I'm just going to pass this pad and pen around and just put your name and your email on it, and I'll make sure you get on our list. Thank you. So let's take a moment as we say and participate in Unity's Prayer of Light together. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. The presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is. And all is well. Let's see, I'm not sure whether we have anybody else coming in or not. I guess not. So the first sentence of what we're on page 160 of what we're starting off with is, as you are standing in your knowing. So I'm going to suggest everybody stand up. We're not going to do anything strange. I'm not going to force any introverts to interact. Because I know exactly what that's like, right? Now just close your eyes for a second. And hear these words. And experience them on whatever level you can experience them in. Now when you stand in your knowing, I know who I am, I know what I am, I know how I serve. And to let yourself get a sense of that, of what it is like to stand or sit or lie down or be in your knowing. Even though there are objections coming from the thinking mind, even though there might be part of you in doubt, you can continue to still be in your knowing. Take a breath. And you can sit down. So what's the difference between being in your knowing and not being in your knowing? when I'm in my knowing, I just am. And there's no need to make up anything. Whatever comes across my mind is the truth, and I tell it just like it is.
Not being in my knowing is like trying to get the fitted sheet onto the bed, and every time I put one corner, the other one pops out. And being in my knowing is like, oh, they all fit.
Mm-hmm. Or if it pops out, it doesn't matter. Neither am I, okay. It's just, you know, there's, not to get into too much paradoxical thinking, but there is that sense of it just doesn't matter. Well, it matters on one level, but it doesn't on others, right? On the deepest level, it doesn't. Because, you know, I'm going to lie down on that mattress and go to sleep anyway, whether the sheet's perfect fit or not, right? There's always going to be the mind entering into the picture. So if somebody were to come to me, let's say in a counseling session, and after months of spilling their guts, says to me finally, well, you know, should I get a divorce or shouldn't I? And me sitting there in my infinite wisdom would say, it doesn't matter. And so my client would get really pissed off and say, well, you know, what am I paying you for? What are you, you know, you're supposed to give me the answers. And I said, look, if you get a divorce, part of your mind is going to be continually occupied of what it would be like if I didn't. And if you don't, there's going to be part of your mind that's going to be occupied with what would it be like if I did. So your mind's going to be occupied with the other side of things no matter what you decide to do. So that's not where the answer lies. The answer doesn't lie in logic. The answer doesn't lie in definition so much. The answer lies in you knowing or being aware of what the highest good for you is at this moment. So when I left the brothers after being a Roman Catholic brother for 27 years, there was part of me that continued to wonder what it would be like if I stayed. And I knew that if I decided to stay, because I had been put, or I had brought myself to the cusp of things, that place where you have to make a decision. Where you say, well, I really don't know. Well, but you really have to, okay? It's one thing or the other. And so there I was. And so I knew that I would be pulled one way or another, so that the answer to my question of what's the right thing for me to do at this moment had to come from another level of awareness other than just my thinking mind that was weighing one thing in the balance or something else in the balance. Well, if you do this, then this is going to happen. If you do this, then that's going to happen. Where is my heart taking me? Where is my soul taking me? Where is it leading? And, you know, it's kind of like that Merton prayer of, I know you will lead me in the right direction, though I may know nothing about it. Because I don't. But when I stand in my knowing, I have a sense or an idea of the truth that I am in at this moment. Not 5 minutes from now, not 25 minutes from now, because everything is happening right now anyway. I am standing in my knowing. I think that's what we do on Sunday morning without realizing it a whole lot. We come in here and we stand in our knowing. That's what helps create that wonderful space that we find ourselves in sometimes. I was sharing this with somebody else the other day. You know, when I did that reading last Sunday from Mortal Lessons about the doctor and the Buddhist priest, and we came to the end of the story, and here was this profound silence. that almost that didn't want to be disturbed. And so I had to just sit with that and wait until it was kind of like a Quaker meeting. Okay, we all sat here quietly until the spirit moved somebody to talk. But that's also standing in our knowing. It doesn't have to do anything. Do you know the difference between being in your knowing and not being in your knowing? Do you know the difference between having an open heart or a closed heart? Or, for me anyway, the other side of that is being in the place of I'm not aware of either one. I'm just boop, 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 boop. I'm being led around by, well, should I have a cup of coffee or not? What should I be doing? Is it okay for me to read a book? Oh no, I should be doing this. Or am I open to what the universe is handing me? Here's a blank piece of paper. You can do any. You can scribble on it if you want to. You can write cuss words on it if you want to. You can make a paper airplane out of it if you want to. You can wipe your behind with it if you want to. You can just leave it on the table if you want to. But.
I kept thinking I would have had to fix that sheet before I laid down.
See, we're still on that sheet now, okay? Isn't that interesting? Because part of my mind was still occupied with that. Isn't it interesting the steps the mind will take in order to try to be in charge of the situation? And I'm not making the mind or the thinking mind or the personality self into the bad guy here, because that's just another dualism. But it's recognizing that, becoming aware. Oh, there's my mind trying to define my life again, or here I am trying to define my life through my mind, through my intellect, through my duality, through my sense of separateness. Not that that's, and again, not to make that bad or wrong or anything, but the awareness that comes and you say, do I want to do that? Do I want to buy into that definition of self, that limited definition, which I certainly can. And it's not wrong or bad that I do that. I don't know about you, but there are sometimes I choose to be in limitation. Sometimes without realizing it, sometimes realizing it. Well, you know, for me it would feel better to follow the list that I made for the tasks that I have in mind today than it would be just to allow myself the freedom to do what I want to do. Oh, isn't, and then I step back from that and go, isn't that interesting? Not bad or wrong. Oh. But then I get more of a sense of what it is like to be in limitation. I say, do you really want to do that? But see, being unlimited is kind of scary.
And Jerry, I find too that I'm in my knowing when a person or a group are talking about something, and if I speak my truth, it wouldn't matter. And I can sit there and being my knowing, listen to them argue for their limitations.
The way that, I think it was Uspensky, who was a disciple of the Russian-Indian mystic Gurdjieff, put it this way, he said, you have to realize you're in prison before you can get out. I remember I shared that at a 12-step meeting and got all sorts of odd looks from people. They didn't know what the hell I was talking about. And, of course, I had to stop for a minute, too, and say, well, you know, I said that partly because I needed to be reminded of it, but I also said it partly because this is such a, you know, I'm such a sage, I'm such a wise person coming out with these quotations that will change people's lives, right? And they didn't know what the hell I was talking about. So it was really kind of interesting. There were a whole number of things, motivations that were involved in me saying that. Part of it was that I accepted that as being the truth, and another part of it was, well, won't this sound very wise? Well, it only sounds wise to people who thinks it's wise, all right? If nobody knows what the hell you're talking about, it doesn't matter. It's kind of funny sometimes what we do to ourselves. Now, when you stand in your knowing, I know who I am, I know what I am, I know how I serve, you have created a path. So this is a little bit paradoxical, but it's also true. Okay, by claiming my truth, I've created a direction or a path that I am moving in. And what the guide's job is to be like those sweepers in curling. You ever seen that Olympic sport? And these two guys are sweeping like maniacs in front of this stone, right? To have it move in the right direction, to have it go a little bit further, a little bit faster, okay? They don't touch the stone, that's not allowed. But they can sweep like hell to melt the ice a little bit, to make it a little bit smoother, to get all of any of stuff that might be in the way. And so I really believe, okay, we've created a path by saying, I know who I am, I know what I am, I know how I serve. And then the guides come in and say, we are going to sweep in front of this path like maniacs, making what John the Baptist called making the rough ways smooth and the crooked ways made straight. See, it's all over the place. And John was quoting, I think he was quoting Isaiah, which was about 1,000 years before then. But my job is to make the rough ways smooth and the crooked ways made straight. Oh, that always stuck with me. So I'm one of the guides are the sweepers, right? That are sweeping like crazy in front of this stone that you have created a path for, which is you, a path for you to move through and move on. It's all happening. It's not just, oh, well, I've created a path. I wonder if you go on it or not. You are on it. But you're not doing that alone either. You're not just kind of with a machete sort of knocking things out of the way. The movement is occurring. And as we walk you down this path, we're all walking one another home. As we walk you down this path, we want you to see the creations that you have made that guide the way on each side. And we could say the creations that are in front of you, because you can't really ignore them. What do I claim here? Where am I not in my worth there? These are the sights that show themselves as you walk forward, and they are never shown to you to keep you in place or to be a barrier to your growth, but as an opportunity to grow and move forward in your awareness of your worth. The way one of my teachers likes to call it, she says, what's your growing edge? So as soon as I ask myself that question, I become aware of this thing or this stuff, right? That is, I won't say it's in my way, but that is there waiting to be transformed or waiting to be healed. What's your growing edge? Yeah.
had another shadow dream along that line.
Okay.
I had a dream a couple nights ago that I saw monsters, a couple monsters, and I was so scared I woke up and couldn't go back to sleep. And I thought, oh, I'm a psychologist. I should go back in the dream and talk to them.
Okay.
But I couldn't. They were too scary. So I lay awake for an hour, and I had a memory come that in the last week or so, someone had kind of touched me inappropriately, and it was painful, and I buried it. I wouldn't think about it. But then it went away. And I started thinking about the monster again and thought, how can I get the courage to go back into my dream? Finally, I went back, and the monster was there, and I was too scared, and I sat with it for a while. And nothing was happening. It was still scaring me and still looming around.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I had an idea. I took it by its shoulders, and I said, I promise I will never let anyone touch you inappropriately again. Mm-hmm. And the monster went away, and I felt better and stronger. Mm-hmm. It didn't go away, but it became part of me.
Thank you for that.
That was my growing edge.
Wow.
Thank you for inviting that in. One of the thoughts that I had as I was listening to you is, if that happens again, is to make some tea. Say, come on, let's have some tea. It'll still be the monster, but I'll be having tea with it. And maybe as we have that first cup of tea, that first sip of tea together, there might be some transformation. But you realize that already, that my fear, or what's translating itself into a monster, is my fear of looking at it more, let's say, more deeply or more openly, or even further than that, what I heard you saying too is, I am claiming my power over this.
With this.
With this, okay. Yes, it's my monster, but I am claiming my power with it, because it wasn't just pushing it away or making it dissolve. What do you have to tell me? What do you have to teach me? Yeah.
Rebecca.
Do you have any words of wisdom about, like she did, with not being able to face them? They were too scary. I know when I got injured this summer that I tried to go into my pain, and it was too dark. I couldn't go into it. Do you have any words of wisdom of where you can move from there?
These are not my words. These are words I've gotten from another teacher that makes perfect sense to me, Rebecca. Instead of, let's say, diving into my perception of pain, that's another way of looking at it. See, instead of giving it a name and, you know, posting it on Facebook and saying that's what it is, saying this is what my perception of what this energy is, that it's pain. Okay, that's fine. You can name it anything you want to. Name it what makes sense to you. But before you dive into it or put it on like a robe or let it put itself on you like a robe, okay, to step back for a minute and begin a dialogue with it. You might be able to even start with the question of what do you have to tell me? What do you have to teach me? What are you here for? Or it might be as simple as saying, hello, I'm frightened of you. Is there anything you can let me know? Is there anything you can tell me or share with me that would lessen my fear of you and allow us to work together on whatever it is we need to work together on? So, like with anything else, it's almost like in psychology, there's an exercise we can do of desensitizing. So let's suppose there's somebody in my life that really drives me crazy, or makes me angry, or makes me afraid. And so what I do in my imagination is I allow them to get are you still afraid of them when they're 10 miles away? I said, no, they're 10 miles away. Well, how about 5 miles? No. How about that's perfect. They can be a mile away. That's fine. Well, how about 50 feet up? Nope, sorry. Okay, well, let's have them go back 100 feet. Check that out. Is it still... No, I can talk to them through a megaphone, right? But they're not. They don't hook me at this. Okay, well, that's fine. I've created a safe distance between myself and my perception of whatever this energy is. But within that safe distance, I've also created a space to be able to dialogue, to be able to talk, to be able to listen, to be able to share. Is that helpful, any? Because I think it's sort of silly to say, well, I'm going to face this head on, all right? If you're ready to, fine.
What helps me is to know I'm not alone. I can ask God, Jesus, Holy Spirit, angels, guides to help me. I'm not alone.
Thank you. How often I forget that one. That's why I keep Margo around. She keeps reminding me that you're not alone.
You don't mind if I go back to that growing edge?
Sure.
Can you help me understand how we identify what personally is my growing edge, or how I can identify that growing edge? Because I'm not sure, you know?
Okay.
I have numerous growing edges probably at different times. One of the ones that I recognize a lot more clearly now is that I have a very, very difficult time with criticism, or what I perceive as criticism. Even if somebody were to go so far as to ask me to repeat something that I just said, there's a little part of me that feels insulted by that, or discounted by that, or that there must be something wrong with me about that. And I almost feel this internal sort of cringing. I say, wow, I thought I dealt with that a long time ago. There it is. Now, I don't want to be afraid of that, and I don't want to push it away either. I want to say, what is that? Where's that coming from? Where's my fear of being wrong coming from? And what I realize deeply is that my fear of being wrong is the way I've translated that in my mind, or the way I translated that as a child, is if you are wrong about something, or let's say not correct about something, then there must be something wrong with you. Ah. So here I am face to face with what I used to call one of my demons, which is not really a demon, it's a piece of woundedness. It's a very old piece of woundedness that is still there. And so what do you do with woundedness? Do you beat the crap out of it? Do you throw it away? Do you cross it out and say, well, I shouldn't have that anymore? Because if I really look at that, like we were talking to Rebecca about a moment ago, if I really look at that, what I'm going to see is a scared, frightened little two-year-old that doesn't care about right or wrong so much, but just wants to be okay. I'm just trying on this body. I've just had this body for 2 years and I'm still working my way through it, okay? I'm just trying to learn how to work with this spacesuit here. I just learned how to walk. And all I need from you is to just let me know that I'm okay. Now my parents can't do that for me because they're not here anymore. So I am being called on to open myself to my divine truth and to be open, that is being, am I okay? You're okay as a two-year-old, and you're okay as a divine being. You're okay in the midst of the paradox you find yourself in. Now, because that's such a core issue for me, I might be called back to heal that again and again and again and again. How many times do I need to do that? Until I don't need to do it anymore. I don't know. Is that going to be finished this lifetime? Maybe, maybe not. But I keep coming back to the idea or the sense of being able to do that gently for myself. Can I forgive myself for not being perfect in my own perception? Can I forgive myself for still being angry or annoyed or upset about angry people? That's another one of mine, okay, that I can go into a lot of detail with. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. You're saying basically what you're saying is what makes you feel uncomfortable.
That's probably a good way of putting it, all right? What sort of puts me up and so instead of getting into a wrestling match with it, I want to step back and say, where's my discomfort coming from? Maybe it's coming from my own sense of perfection or imperfection. Maybe it's coming from an old message that I realized I had. Maybe it's coming from exactly what Margot said a moment ago, that I'm feeling alone in this process. I mean, I've come across that one any number of times, and I forget that one. They say, it's a wonderful reminder, you are not alone in this journey. The guides are sweeping like crazy, right, to make the rough ways smooth and the crooked ways made straight. So here I am standing on my growing edge, right at the edge, thinking that, oh no, what do I got to do? And here's these beings, these wonderful beings of light sweeping in front of me and saying, it's okay to take the next step, even if you don't know where that's going. Because you haven't been guided here by mistake. We come in here every Sunday morning. I do. I'm sure you do too. We come in here every Sunday morning standing on that growing edge. Kind of like this. One step. And we automatically take, as soon as I start reading something, we take that step. I have no idea where that's going. Neither do you. And see, the other part of it is, I have no idea where that's going, but that's okay. At least I'm getting that from you. If it wasn't okay, you wouldn't be showing up on Sunday morning. I don't want to listen to that crap anymore. These are the sights that show themselves as you walk forward, and they are never shown to you to keep you in place or to keep you stuck, but as an opportunity to grow and move forward in your awareness of your worth. When you see something, this kind of begins to get into what Greg was asking a moment ago. When you see something on the path that does not feel in congruence with the vibration of love, or shuts your heart down, or feels fearful, when you fear it, when you demand it gone, we will ask you to do this. Claim it in the word. Here's another whole series of exercises to do. Now, this is totally contradictory to what the intellect would tell us. So when I claim something as word, when I claim something as being part of my being, I'm claiming it as something that I created to learn something from. But if I make it into something fearful or something I need to push away or something that I need to deny as being a part of me, then I'm adding to that disruption. I'm adding to that sense of lower vibration. We will ask you to do this. Claim it in the word. I am word through this thing I see before me. I am word through this old belief system. I am word through this fear I see that I believe will overtake me. So if I get into the self-criticism thing, word, I am word through my self-criticism. Word, I am word through my fear of what I think other people might be thinking about me, however far removed from reality that might be. Now, to the mind that says, well, all you're doing is you're reinforcing that fear, I said, no, I'm not. I am holding what I am perceiving as being fear, or I am holding what I'm perceiving as being pain. I am holding that in the light of truth. And by doing so, I am allowing it to reveal itself to me as a lesson that I have created to learn. I don't know how or why that's going to show up, but when I do that, the fear or the doesn't may not completely go away, but I say, oh, that's what that's about. That's about me not being able to claim my worth. That's about me being so picky that I'm almost going to be looking at things to prove that I'm not okay. Not that any of you would ever do that. And I begin to recognize, I say, oh, that's what that is. I don't have to be angry at it. I don't have to be fearful about it. I don't have to beat myself up about it. I say, oh, that's what that is. Well, what I will do is I will hold that in the light. And I will allow my perception of it and the learning that I've contracted with already about that particular person or that particular incident, I will hold that in the light and I will allow my creation to reveal itself to me in terms of what I have already set up for myself or what I've already asked to learn from. Now, sometimes that can be rather delicate. If you pick up a scared 2-year-old and are working on letting them know, I was going to say convincing, but that sounds like manipulation, letting them know that they are safe, that's not going to happen right away. I might have to hold that little being for a while until it, you know, the words don't matter a whole lot. What's going to happen is we're going to make a heart connection at some point or another, and the crying is going to slow down. And then we're going to look under the bed to see if there really are any monsters under there. And then we're going to look in the closet. And then we're going to straighten the sheets out, okay? That might have gotten tangled. And we're going to do whatever it takes, not to prove anything, but to allow you to feel safe in the midst of this. And maybe later on, I can let this 2-year-old, who now is a 14-year-old, I can let them know, you know, it's perfectly okay to sometimes feel as if we're doing this all on our own. It's okay when we're growing up to have a sense of abandonment, to feel like nobody understands us. It's pretty natural to have that happen. But you know, there are some things that are unchangeable. Even though fear or separation or other things might enter into the picture. And one of the things that is absolutely unshakable is that I love you as unconditionally as I possibly can, and I always will. And that always won't make you feel better, because it won't necessarily all of a sudden take away or erase your feelings. But when you can stand in the truth of that, then feelings never have to overpower that truth. They never have to take that away, no matter how badly or difficult you might feel.
I wonder what it would have been like if I had learned that lesson when I was 14. Or 44.
You couldn't.
Or 84. But see, what we're doing is we're standing in the truth of that. And if I hear you correctly, I'm hearing, yeah, I do know what that's like. I'm going to forget probably, but I do know what that's like. And I can be in that truth when I remember again. I am word through this old belief system. I am word through this fear I see that I believe will overtake me. Just, we're raising the vibration of whatever it is that we're calling fear or separation, whatever it is. We're raising it to a level that the mind cannot comprehend or understand, and yet we are raising it to a level where it now becomes a teacher that I've created for myself to learn something from. And most of the time it's always going to come down as you are not alone and you are unconditionally loved, no matter what you might think and no matter what you might feel. There's absolutely nothing that can separate you from the love of God. Absolutely nothing. Not even how you think about yourself. As you claim the power of the word in all of these manifestations on the path, you align them to the Christ. They become reborn as you do. And they become your invitation to continue forward. So here's my divine self saying, come on, come on. You can take another step. I'm not asking you to take another 50 steps. I know this particular step you're being asked to take into the unknown. You can't see the ladder in front of you. Even though I don't know what's in the road ahead, I know you will guide me in the right way. So come on, it's okay. Not only am I encouraging you to take that step, but I am holding you. I am holding you as you take that step. I will send my angels before you, lest you bang your foot against a stone. Believe that? Mm-hmm.
In Hinduism, there's a saying that for every one step you take towards God, God takes 100 towards you.
Thank you for that. As you take one step to God. So let's take a minute with that one, okay? That's beautiful. I'm reminded of someone who said to his theology teacher at one point, in a very, very cynical way, do you think I'll ever find God? And the teacher said, no. Shocked him. But I know God will find you. Mentioned this poem a while ago by Francis Thompson called The Hound of Heaven. Francis was a drug addict, alcoholic, rescued from the streets by some friend of his, and he wrote this poem about God was the hound of heaven, chasing him down the highways and byways, the alleys and the streets. And he was running like crazy not to be caught. But knowing that at some point he was going to kind of run out of breath. Right? God's relentless. God's not going to stop. The divine is not going to stop, because that's the truth of who you are. How can the truth of who you are stop? Can't. How could it be stopped? Can't be. So as we sit here in chairs, and yet at the same time as we stand in our knowing, let us simply be. You can be in the quiet of it all. You can be in the conflict of it all. You can be in the beauty of it all. You can be in the don't know of it all. Doesn't matter. Our lessons become reborn, as do you, and they become your invitation to continue forward. Deep breath. You can open your eyes when you're ready. I would be rather remiss if I did not say, I was talking to Bill a little bit earlier when we were messing around with the coffee. He said he came across a bumper sticker that I would really like. It said, "Born Again Buddhist." There's a whole lot of nuances to that one, okay? You see, the mind can go a lot of different places with that, and there's some part of you and me just goes, "Ah." Oh. It was like this happened years ago when those Christian fish were so popular on cars. You know, those magnetic things with the. Could go into a whole historical story about where that came from, but that's beside the point right now. You know, then they had Darwin with the fish with legs on it, okay? And I saw one, and it was so interesting. It was a great big fat fish that said Buddha written in the middle of it. And I was looking around for one of those, and this is before the internet, and I couldn't find one. I finally came across one, and I was going to buy it. And I realized the only reason why I wanted to buy it was to annoy the Christian right, okay? It was kind of like a bumper sticker I saw, you know, doing the best I can to piss off the religious right, right? And I said, you know, there's enough anger in the world. There's enough sense of separation. I don't need to add to that. So as funny as that was to me, it wasn't worth me putting on my car just to annoy somebody else. And so that was a really important lesson at that particular time. But what I would encourage us to do as the week unfolds is to just become aware of, I wouldn't even call it your growing edge, but if you come across, as Greg mentioned, if you come across a situation or a group of thoughts or a set of behavior that are producing discomfort in you, stop for a minute and step back from it if you can, and just begin to discover where the discomfort is coming from. You don't even have to do anything about it. Just become aware of it. You might decide to do something about it. Just become aware of it. Say, oh, thank you. Kind of like a little fortune cookie. Thank you for letting me know what's going on. Maybe I'm not ready to take care of that right now. Maybe I am. Okay? So again, in love and peace and gratitude, the light of God surrounds us. Love of God enfolds us. Power of God protects us. Presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is. And all is well, and you are not alone. Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers, please.
Thank you, John.
What do you need?
Was it
well-timed or
it's perfect? Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Jerry, did you notice I put this up there?
Oh, yeah, thank you. Good. Let's see, that's for John.
Thank you.
And that's for Joe. Could you give that to Joe and Rebecca?
Sure.
Thank you.
Here you go, Joe.
You did.
Hi, Peggy. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for being here. I didn't get to put my name on the email.
Wait a second.
Oh, here it is.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The leader.
Thanks again, Jerry.
Oh, you're welcome, man. Thank you. I'll check out the Messiah.
Yeah,
that's a serious.